Welcome, everyone, to Trisha's True Crime Radio, formerly known as Web Sleuths Radio. My name is Trisha Griffith. I am co-owner of WebSleuths.com and owner of ForumsForJustice.org. Thank you for joining us tonight. We have a very, very special, incredible guest. He is a renowned defense attorney, renowned author, and renowned ex-con, Mickey Sherman. He'll be joining us here in just a little bit, and trust me, you. If you haven't heard from Mickey, you will love this man. He is back and he is going strong. We're going to get with Mickey in just a moment, but first an update on Toni Ingram. Toni Ingram claims her daughter Morgan was stalked and murdered last year. After our amazing Web Sleuths members checked out her story, it was discovered that there wasn't one bit of evidence to suggest Morgan Ingram was murdered or stalked. So we no longer discuss the Ingram case because we feel there has been no crime committed. It's very tragic that Toni Ingram lost her daughter, Morgan, who was just a very young 20 years old with her life ahead of her. It's very sad indeed. But Toni and her husband still believe that she was stalked and murdered. Toni and her husband were on Dr. Phil last Monday to discuss their case. Dr. Phil pretty much came to the same conclusion we did and told Toni to shut down her blog. In fact, he said that was the most important thing of the day that he had to say. Shut down your blog, Toni, because she blogs about this every single day. And he told her to stop accusing innocent people. That's right. On Dr. Phil, Toni Ingram accused Brooke Harris and her father, James, of having something to do with the death of Megan. Brooke and James were on Dr. Phil. They were gracious, caring, and very, very patient with Toni. And if you saw that episode, Toni got more and more wound up and started just not making very much sense toward the end there. It was very sad. And although Dr. Phil did say he felt the case should be reopened because of the things that weren't done when the police investigated Morgan's death, he clearly told Toni and her husband that there was no evidence whatsoever to suggest the Harris family, or anyone else for that matter, murdered Megan. I have reached out to James Harris and Brooke. I wrote to James that if he came on this show, he'd be treated with respect. There wouldn't be any kind of ambush. And I explained to him that the people are very interested and care about him and his family and what the Ingrams have put them through. I'm waiting to hear from them, and I hope I hear from them soon. Toni Ingram lost her daughter. It's so tragic. Just thinking about it, if you have kids, just thinking about it probably makes your chest tighten and you want to burst into tears. I know I do. It just sickens me to think of a parent losing a child, especially in this manner. It appears to be possibly suicide, and that, I'm sure, is incredibly hard to take. But Toni Ingram needs to face facts. As of right now, there is no evidence that Morgan was murdered, and she needs to stop accusing innocent people. Okay, so hopefully we will get the Harris family on here. Maybe next week, maybe the week after. We'll keep our fingers crossed. Let's get to our guest tonight. He is one of my favorite people. He has been for years. He actually came on Web Sleuth on a chat back in the old days before we had radio or internet radio, and did a live online chat with us and was absolutely hilarious. And even though he's one of my favorite people, I always ask myself, how can he defend those people? It's defense attorney Mickey Sherman. Mickey, thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure.
Mickey, let's start with what you've been up to. When you and I were conversing back and forth about this, you said, I don't know if you're aware of my situation. Well, I knew you'd been in prison, but I didn't realize that you wanted to talk about it or that you'd even written about it. And it's absolutely fascinating and so funny, if you can use the word term funny in with being in prison.
Yeah.
But let's talk about what you were in prison for. What happened?
11 years ago, 2001, 2002, I got behind in taxes. I was making a lot of money, and I was paying bills, but I didn't pay the IRS bill in time. And basically, it was paying late. Now, that sounds like it's a BS story, but in essence, that's it. I didn't pay them in 2001 and 2002. They started to investigate me. It took them 7 years because they just assumed that I was doing bad things, that I was like not declaring income or phony deductions and stuff like that. And they came to the conclusion that, no, I declared every dime, I filed on time, I filed accurately, I just owed them a boatload of money. And by the way, none of this is a criticism of the IRS or the government. I was the only guy in the federal prison camp that was not pissed off at his lawyer or felt that he got screwed by the government, and I still feel that way. I was not screwed by anybody. This was totally appropriate what they did. It was a misdemeanor, not a felony. There was no plea bargaining involved because there was never any felony involved in that. There was no hiding of any funds. But the bottom line is shame on me. I screwed up, and why should I be any different from anyone else? And granted, they don't go after people for doing this too often, but they wanted to make an example out of me, and I totally understand and appreciate that.
Well,
I'm the kind of person they should make an example out of.
Oh, that
so
is
amazing. I did 6 months
amazing.
In a camp and then 3 months in a halfway house.
But let me ask you, this kind of it kind of scares me reading this, because I thought you would just, if you didn't pay them, that you could just pay them and pay a fine. But that wasn't the case here. Was there a lot of money involved, or what was the deal?
I paid them $420,000.
And you still went to prison?
Yep.
On a misdemeanor. And that was their doing. They came and said, we're basically going to make an example out of you.
No, they didn't say it, but by virtue of the fact that they selected me for prosecution, that's what they did. But again, Tricia, I don't take issue with that. I'm the kind of person that they should make an example out of. When they get me, they get a headline in all the local and some of the national papers with my picture, and shame on me. I shouldn't have exposed myself to that. It would have been very easy. I should have not paid something else and paid them.
Well,
totally my fault.
Mickey, that is refreshing, to say the least, to hear, because not in your business and what we do here on True Crime Radio and on Web Sleuths, we don't ever hear anybody taking responsibility for their crime. So that is very refreshing. Now, here's the thing that I find interesting, Mickey Sherman. You took this event in your life, going to prison, and you turned it into a chapter in the latest Chicken Soup for My Soul. If you touch my stuff, I'll kill you. That's how it all started out, with you yelling that out in the middle of the night. Tell us how you started to get at ease in prison and how it led to Chicken Soup for the Soul.
Well, let me go to the back end of that first. The reason the Chicken Soup for the Soul thing came about is after I started practicing law again, because I was suspended while I was in prison and for a short period after, and then I got my license to practice back, the local papers and a couple of the national papers did articles on me on coming back, so to speak. And the publisher of Chicken Soup for the Soul had read one of those articles, called me up or emailed me, I forgot which, and said, that's a great story for us on our next book, which is called Chicken Soup for the Soul, Power of Positive. And would I care to write a little chapter? And, of course, I said, no, I think I'm kind of done with enough Mickey Sherman screwed up and went to jail stories. I didn't think we needed another one on a national basis. But she called me a couple of times, and then I started getting reactions to the article that was about me in the papers and the ABA Journal and whatnot. And then I got a note from a relative of somebody that I was in the prison camp with, who said that they all read the article about me and they were happy that I'm doing okay, I'm practicing law again, but they were even happier that it gave them hope that there's life, there's some kind of redemption after they finish their sentences. So that was kind of a nice bell to ring. I said, you know what, if it's going to help somebody else and not make me feel like a schmuck like I have been for the last 7 years, I'll do it. And I did it. Of course, I waited until the last minute, took 40 minutes to write the chapter, emailed it in. They liked it, and it's Chapter 9 of the current Chicken Soup for the Soul series.
It's a great article, or a great story, and you sent it to me. And let's talk about If You Touch My Stuff, I'll Kill You. You basically found a way to make humor really work for you in prison.
Well, I had nothing else going there. I mean, you know, there's not much you can do other than read, work out, play bocce, play basketball, and stuff like that. And the folks there, I got to tell you, were incredibly nice. I'm talking about the fellow inmates. I was in a camp, which is like a not very low security. There's no fences or razor wire or guards as such, just a couple of corrections officers who are more administrative than anything. But the guys I was with was 125 other guys who were all not just white-collar people. A lot of them were ex-drug dealers who were serving at the end of their sentence, There was a lot of rabbis there. There was a lot of doctors. There was three mayors, Palestinians, Nigerians. It was a real eclectic group of people that people I would never really not associate with, but I'd never really get an opportunity to know. And one thing I had up there in those 6 months is you had time. So at first I kind of went into a cocoon. I was just not in shock or disbelief, but I was just so miserable that I put myself in this position that I kind of never came out of my bunk. And then finally one night I realized, you know, these guys are going to think I'm insane. So I remember this scene from the movie Stripes with Bill Murray, where all the guys are introducing themselves, and one's funnier than the next. And there was a guy named Psycho, who looks at all the other soldiers and says, "If anybody calls me Francis, I'll kill you. If anybody you guys touch my stuff, I'll kill you. If anybody touches me, I'll kill you." So I just recited that line real loud. And at first I thought I was like I totally had a nervous breakdown. But then they realized it was from that movie, and they all got a big laugh out of it. And
so let me paint the picture, Mickey, really quickly here.
Sure.
This was just out of nowhere when you started yelling this line, right? And
yeah.
It was at night.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden they're laying there, and all of a sudden you start yelling, "If you call me Francis, I'll kill you. If you touch my stuff, I'll kill you." And that eventually kind of broke everybody up, and it really broke the ice for me.
Yeah, but you had to say it in the cadence of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
"If any of you guys touch my stuff, I'll kill you. Anybody who calls me Francis, I'll kill you." And again, this
very
is from, you know, they're looking at I'm on the top bunk. I'm a 64-year-old, somewhat known Jewish lawyer who they thought I was there for tampering with the jury, which is kind of funny.
Yeah.
Nobody really knows what anybody's there for. And I said to somebody, somebody said to me, "Is it really true that you bribed a juror or was it a witness?" I said, "What are you talking about?" I said, "Well, that's the word." So I thought for a while and I said, "You know what? I like that story a lot better than what I really did." Rather than just send an envelope in without a check, it was much more colorful. So then I changed it to, now I got in a fight with some bikers in Jersey, and one of them got killed. But nobody ever really believed that, but they always enjoyed me telling it.
I was going to say, I can't imagine that they believed that coming from you.
No, but the telling of it was worth it.
Exactly. So you were able to do that, and I find it interesting that you found so many of your fellow inmates to be nice. I don't think you would think about that.
Not so many. The great, great, great majority.
Uh-huh.
So it's a unique phenomenon. These are guys who, many of them were multimillionaires, some of them were penniless drug dealers, but everyone had the same shared experience, and that is that they've all been stripped of their, not dignity, but of their freedom. And we're all in the same boat. So you kind of... it kind of becomes like a common denominator, and it takes away the barriers.
Exactly. It does make everybody the same. You're equal in there, that's for sure. You say that you want to keep in touch with these people, but you're not allowed to? What's that about?
When you leave prison, in the federal system at least, you are not allowed to consort with known felons. And so other than me, everyone else there was there for felony, so you're not allowed to really talk to each other once you're out.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. I thought you could at least, you know, communicate via email, but you could really get in trouble for that. So are you on probation?
Supervised release for about another month, January 27th.
Okay. We're talking with defense attorney Mickey Sherman. We've just gone through his days in prison. He went in there courtesy of the IRS. Over some tax questions. He's taken full responsibility for it. And Mickey Sherman has come out an even bigger and brighter person, believe it or not. And the name of the book is Chicken Soup for the Soul, Positive, what is it?
Power of Positive.
Power of Positive. Chicken Soup for the Soul, Power of Positive. You can read Mickey's whole story in there. And Mickey is also the author of the book, How Can You Defend Those People? And that is a great book, by the way. I love that. We're going to get into one of your cases here in just a little bit because we do have a lot of questions. Anyway, let's get to the topic of the night, Mickey Sherman. Couple of topics of the night. Drew Peterson. Okay, now Drew is claiming that he had ineffective counsel from defense attorney Joel Brodsky because Brodsky called Stacey Peterson, his last wife's divorce lawyer, And Stacy told the divorce lawyer that Drew killed Kathleen Savio, and that's who he was on trial for killing, and he was found guilty of first-degree murder. It was my understanding, Mickey, that Drew was all for getting this guy on the stand. They wanted to show that Stacy had a reason to lie about this because she wanted a bigger divorce settlement. It was stupid reasoning. Now he's trying to say, after he agreed with his lawyer to do this, now he's trying to say, Joel Brodsky blew it for me. It was ineffective counsel. I need a new trial. What are your thoughts?
Well, as you know, that's a standard appeal for pretty much every case. It's ineffectiveness of counsel. Usually it's the last one. Here it seems to be one of the first ones with Brodsky. It's not either. They're not going to win on that one point. The standard, and I'm no expert on this, thank God, is that the lawyer has to A, screw up, and B, that screw up has to lead to a conviction. In other words, were it not for that lawyer doing X, Y, and Z, he would have likely have been acquitted. And I can't see how they can say that here. The other thing is that it's usually something the lawyer did or didn't do as opposed to exercising certain strategy. Because strategy really is never going to be second-guessed by an appellate court. And that's, I think, the primary problem Peterson has here. Mm-hmm. Plus the fact that Peterson really, he made his own horrible nest, whether Brodsky agreed to it or not. They're going on Dial-A-Date in the Chicago radio show. I spoke to Brodsky right before or after, right after that. He called me about something. I don't really know him except a couple of phone calls. So really I'm not in a position to say that he did a great job or a lousy job. But the litmus test is not, did he win the case or lose the case? A lot of great lawyers lose some big cases. A lot of bad lawyers win cases. It's just the name of the game.
What's the litmus test for a good lawyer if it's not that?
Covering all the bases, trying very hard, and caring.
Mm-hmm.
Caring.
And so you would never let your client that is up for first-degree murder go on Dial-A-Date, right?
Not on Dial-A-Date. I may have to make a statement or something like that. I mean, I'm not locked in that...
that they don't do anything.
They never say anything to the media. I mean, generally that's the case, but...
Would you have taken Drew Peterson's case had he come to you?
Oh, sure.
Really?
But why not? It's
I don't know.
It's a challenging case.
He's such a jerk. I know you can't look at it like that. I know you can't. Mickey,
no, I do look
at it
like that. He is a jerk. But I mean, that's who gets in trouble very often.
I know.
People make great decisions aren't generally arrested.
No, that's true. So you would take it. And basically, if I remember correctly, you have said you would defend almost anybody. Is there somebody you wouldn't defend?
I've always had problems with child molesters.
Okay, well, that's I'm glad to hear that.
Or stranger rapes. Now that sounds very offensive to say stranger rapes. It's like those idiot Republicans who made all those stupid comments about sexual assault victims. But for some reason, I have an easier, not an easier time, but a more comfortable time representing people on when it's an acquaintance rape as opposed to a stranger rape. Yet, having said that, I know, Tricia, that to many victims, an acquaintance rape is worse because it's an act of betrayal, failure of trust and everything. So I know that, and I know that it doesn't make sense, but I just know what I can deal with and what I can't deal with.
Well, I think everybody has their threshold, and that's yours, and you're a very honest person about it. So you pretty much think that this is just going to be tossed? It's not going to go any further with Drew Peterson?
Not on those grounds.
What grounds could he appeal on? What could he appeal on and win?
I assume fairly recently. And basically, there's like a laundry list of everything that Brodsky did that he felt in some way contributed to his non-acquittal.
Non-acquittal. I love that. So do you think that there was any wrongdoing that you know about in the trial that you looked at when you were reading about it or watching it and you went, oh, my gosh, that is going to go
I felt
up
that way
him.
Pre-trial. When he
really?
Went, and not having that much to do with Brodsky, the decision to have him do the Dial-A-Date was horrible. But then again, Peterson had such an incredible image, he made Scott Peterson look good.
Yeah, that's through. Boy, and that's really hard to do, but you're absolutely right. So you think Drew Peterson, this is just going to be tossed out. He's going to keep appealing, though. What else can he appeal on?
Evidentiary materials, but usually this is the last one. So maybe everything else is just not worth it, though.
Well, it'll be interesting to see. I think they're going to file charges next year for the murder of his fourth wife, Stacey Peterson. And even though they don't have a body yet, they're still going to go after him for that. The prosecutor has made pretty much blatant hints that that's going to be the case. So we will definitely have you back to talk about that case. Okay, now let's go on to somebody that makes me crazy, and that's O.J. Simpson. O.J. Simpson recently filed an appeal because he says he wants to get out of prison. His sentence was way too long. Tell us what he is appealing, what his basis is, what his argument is, and if you think it's a good one.
I'm biased here. Yale Galanter is a good friend of mine, mm-hmm. his lawyer. And I just refuse to believe that Yale screwed up the case. Just knowing how good a lawyer he is. But O.J. and O.J.'s new people are saying that Yale had some vested interest in winning because of a book deal or for other financial deals or because he was enthralled with the media. Well, that's a lot of BS. I just don't buy it.
Mm-hmm.
By the same token, I also agree with O.J. that he shouldn't be in jail, not for 15 years, not for 15 days. The guy got convicted of stealing his stuff from the guy who stole his stuff. There's something that just does not compute there.
Well, yeah, but he had a gun, and that, I think that made all the difference, didn't it? They showed up with a gun.
Somebody showed up with a gun, probably.
Yeah, and they pointed it at him, and I think they moved somebody from point A to point B. Which,
if it wasn't O.J. Simpson, would this guy been? Would they have been convicted? Would they have been even prosecuted?
No,
I don't
absolutely
see it.
Not. No, and I'll admit to that 100%, and I'll be as honest as you are, Mickey Sherman. Of course, this is why he was convicted, because everyone thought he got off with the murder of his wife and Ron Goldman, and so this is a way to get even. You're absolutely right, and it doesn't make it right. It is on, if you take away the names and you just have the outline of this case, it is wrong, but as a human being, I'm like, thank God he finally got some justice, and you're right. You're absolutely right. If it wasn't O.J.
That's what it was. But to say that Galanter would somehow screwed up, how does that reconcile with the fact that about 2 years earlier than that, Galanter represented O.J. in that road rage case down in Florida where somebody gave him the finger or something, and he got out of the car, and there was somebody mm-hmm. got punched or whatever, and he got basically an all-white jury to acquit him, to find him not guilty.
I know. That was amazing. He is a good lawyer, and I've heard people talk about, in fact, it may have even been you, talk about how he gets personally involved and really becomes a part of his client's life and really takes it personally. He is somebody that you want on your side if you need a defense lawyer. He's that good. So it'll be interesting to see. Do you think it's possible that they may look at this appeal and say, well, you know, kind of like how we've done here, the real reason it may not be thrown out is because the judge may think, hey, he did get too much time, but we'll just use this as an excuse to let him go. Do you think
no.
that's a possibility? No?
No, no. Because the appeal courts tend to draw the wagons in a circle, and not to protect the sentencing judge or to cover her rear end, but just to not second-guess her.
Mm-hmm. I see what you're saying.
He's got to come up with something better than this.
Something better. When would he be out of prison if he served the whole thing? Do you have any idea how long he has to serve?
Honestly,
before
I don't. At 15 years, I would guess about half, but
okay.
I could be wrong.
Okay. It'll be interesting to see when he comes up for parole what'll happen. He'll probably get parole, but then again, maybe not. You never know.
The first time.
Yeah, you never know. Now, you wrote the book. We're talking with Mickey Sherman, defense attorney, one of my favorite people. I was so thrilled to see you back on the air and talking again, because you're incredibly honest and you're really funny and you have all the good scoop about the cases. Martha Moxley, okay? I know that is a case that's very near and dear to your heart, Skakel. Now, did you cover this in your book?
No.
I can't remember. You didn't. That's right.
If I mentioned Michael Skakel's name twice, it was a lot, and it had nothing to do with the actual case itself. And I got to tell you, Trisha, I can't talk about it now. There's appeal going on. There's other litigation. And even worse than that, I can't bring myself to talk about it. It's too damn upsetting.
Really?
What I will say is it's the worst nightmare of any criminal defense lawyer, and that is to have an innocent client. And he didn't do it, and he's in jail. And he's been in jail for 12 years.
Can I just say something, and maybe you can't comment. Well, you can't probably. But if he didn't do it, then it's obvious, apparently, that his brother did. And if that's the case, how his brother can let him sit in jail and not come up and say, yes, I did it, is absolutely appalling to me. Can you tell us why you think he's innocent? Why you think Michael Skakel is innocent? Is there any way you can discuss that?
I can, but I won't.
Okay.
The timeline never fit. He didn't do it. It's not even a close call. And I'm sorry to be so contrary, but
No.
No good come out of me opining about this case.
I understand. I just want to ask you one more quick question, because I think this stuff hasn't, you said wasn't true, and I want to make sure that was correct. The story of him killing gophers with a golf club or with a lawnmower, is that true or not?
No, total bullshit.
It's really, really made up, huh?
Totally made up.
Okay. Do you think you'll ever be writing about this case?
Frankly, no. It's too painful.
Just
and again,
really.
Not painful to me because I lost and my ego is suffering, nothing of that nature. I played a part in a process where a guy got screwed beyond belief. Mm. And even though I was his lawyer, I was still part of the criminal justice process that did not work and is not working.
And that really, really did get to you. That's, wow. I would love to be able to hear you talk about this case someday. Hopefully we'll be able to talk about it soon. So your book is still available at Amazon.com. How Can You Defend Those People, correct?
Yep.
And tell us about the book. What's it about? How do you go about, how can you defend those people? What do you tell us in the book?
Well, everyone seems to have an idea that everybody who gets arrested is a scumbag. Mm-hmm. And I used to get so many questions. I'd walk down the street and say, how can you represent that guy? And finally, I was giving a speech to some older retired folks. And I would do this many, many times. And I kind of, not that I got lazy, but I figured my speech used to be that, I know what questions you want to ask me. So what I'll do is I'll just answer the questions. And you know what? I'm going to make it easy on you guys, or you folks, because I know what they are. You don't even have to stand up and ask them. So there are 10 basic questions that they would ask me. How do you represent somebody who's guilty? How do you set charge fees? How do you sleep at night? How do you keep your sanity? Blah, blah, blah. And it was kind of an entertaining speech I used to give. And I realized one day that that's probably a book. That wouldn't be a bad idea.
Well, that's a great book, especially for our members on Web Sleuths and our listeners tonight. It's a great idea for Christmas. If you want the book, drop a hint. Oh, tell me. How can you represent those people? I mean, a lot of them are dirtbags and scumbags, aren't they?
Most of them are not. The great majority are not. They're just people who made some bad decisions.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I once said it, I can't believe I said it in court once, but I quoted Kathy Lee Gifford, that sometimes good people do bad things.
Well, that's true. Boy, you're quoting Kathy Lee Gifford. That's unusual.
Well, but what's funny is the judge, who I thought would be pissed off that I'm making a joke about it, thought for a second and said, that may be true, Mr. Sherman, but as I recall, Frank never kidnapped anybody. What my client was charged with.
So what you're saying is a lot of these people are just good people who make bad decisions, like kidnapping.
Or average people who just, in the scheme of things, make a bad decision, take a wrong turn in the road. Doesn't mean they're evil. Doesn't mean they're horrible. It means they screwed up. And now I think over my last couple of years' experience, I have an even better empathetic feeling towards that and an understanding towards it.
Do you feel that, let's talk about a kidnapping case. even if you know in your heart that someone is guilty, will you pull out all the stops to try and get him off?
I've done that. Yes, I have. That's a chapter in my book.
Why is that okay to do? I mean, it's one thing to defend somebody. Okay, but
what do you mean? I know in my heart. How do I know if I make myself the judge and the jury, and I say no, I really think you're guilty, and I'm not going to try hard, then the system breaks down. How many times have we seen this Innocence Project free people who've been in prison for 16, 17 years wrongfully based on DNA evidence or recanted witness testimony? So it's not up to me to say, no, you don't deserve a defense or you don't deserve a good defense because I think you're guilty.
Well, no, I see what you're saying, and I agree with that. But when I say you know in your heart, I mean, come on, sometimes, you know, you can put A, B, and C together and put the pieces of the puzzle together.
Well,
it's
more so than that. I have a part in my book. I had a kid confess murder to me. Totally, he did it. Absolutely did it. Yet I still represented him.
And you tried to represent him as...
I didn't try to. I did represent him.
I mean, you did enter a not guilty plea for him and try...
Right.
Wouldn't you have felt... I don't know, just on a more a different level as a human being and a neighbor and a friend, that letting a killer walk out is the wrong thing?
People like me, when I say people like me, criminal defense attorneys, were missing that enzyme that you other folks have that says you cannot represent someone if you think or believe or know he's guilty of something evil. I've represented people for sex assault who've gone out and done it again. I've represented people for homicide who've gone out and done it again. Multiple drunk drivers, people who've killed people in cars, I've represented. It's just what a criminal defense lawyer does. There are some people that can't do it and some people that can.
And you don't have a twinge when you hear of your client killing again or your drunk driver client killing somebody or your sexual assault client going out.
Absolutely. I have more than a twinge. And sometimes if the twinge rises to the level of something, my conscience that's pounding that I can't do it, or my heart just can't be in it, then I don't take the case.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What about after you've gotten somebody off, knowing that they did it, you got them off and they went out and did it again, be it drunk driving or killing, what happens to you then?
If I can deal with it emotionally, no problem. I'll take the case again. If I can't, if I just am so upset about it, and there's no specific thing that triggers it. So sometimes maybe it's more likely an empathy with the victim more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, it's not a character defect. It's what need to represent people when they do bad things.
Exactly. I mean, let's face it. As much as it pains a lot of us to say, we want defense attorneys to do exactly what you do, Mickey Sherman, because it would be ridiculous.
And you know
didn't.
Who you're quoting there?
Who?
Jack Nicholson in Few Good Men. You
oh,
want
really?
Us on that wall. You need us on that wall.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I Jack Nicholson and I were like that. We're that close. But you know, I agree. Because you have to have a defense attorney that will do those things. I just couldn't do it. And a lot of people, like you said, can't. And it would be ridiculous if we had defense attorneys that were judge and jury. I'm just asking you.
And there are a lot. There are a lot.
They're what? I'm sorry.
There are a lot who will not take a case if they really think the guy's guilty.
Mm-hmm. That and
Barry
well,
Sheck,
you know,
Barry Sheck will not represent anyone unless he truly believes the person is innocent. He's earned that right.
Yeah, and I agree. And Barry Sheck gets a bad rap sometimes, but he's done some great work. I mean,
Barry's a terrific guy.
Innocent Project. Well, he, you know, after OJ, I think he's done a lot to repair his image, and he's done a lot of great work with the Innocence Project. I can't imagine anything as horrible as sitting on death row, for God's sake, knowing that you're innocent. And
or
thank
just
God
sitting in jail for a week, for God's sakes. And you know what's amazing to me, Trisha, is when these poor guys get out of jail and because Barry or somebody like him freeze him based on DNA or prosecutorial misconduct, they always wind up suing the municipality, the government, the city of Chicago, whatever, and they get like $7 or something. I mean, they don't get $7, but in the scheme of things, it's like $7. They just get such little money. I don't understand that.
I don't either. And I think that is a good option for people to have, is to be able to sue the municipality, because it keeps them on their toes and it keeps them honest. And we've seen that happen way too many times. Mickey Sherman, is there anything else you'd like to talk about? Anything you'd like to add? Any soul searching confessions you want to make to us right now?
My soul searching ends at 8:05 usually. I go into, and then at 9:20 I go into uncontrollable weeping.
Well, I'll tell you what, when that happens, call me back and we'll get you on the air, okay? Mickey Sherman, you are such a sweetheart, and thank you so very, very much. We
My
will
pleasure.
Turn to you for great advice and great wisdom in the months to come, okay?
No problem, anytime.
And we'll put your link up for both of your books up on Web Sleuths, and we'll get some Christmas buying going out there for you, okay?
Very good.
Thank you, Mickey. You take care
take
now.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Kimster.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, it was very nice to hear from Mickey again. What a
isn't
great
he,
guy.
Isn't he great? I just, you know, the fact that he can admit, yeah, I'll get these people off that have raped and killed, and if they do it again, oh well. The fact that he can admit that is amazing, you know, because he takes a lot of grief for that. And let's face it, like I said, as much as it galls us to see a defense attorney really defend a scumbag, you got to have defense attorneys do that or the system doesn't work. He's absolutely right. But I guess the thing that bothers me is I've always felt defense attorneys should be defending innocent people. You know, I don't know how you fix it. You can't fix it, you know. You want a defense attorney that gets somebody off if they're innocent but not if they're guilty. Why can't I be king of the world? I could fix all of this with just a couple of phone calls. I'll be done. Maybe someday.
Well, I think what happened to me is, and I don't think this is bad, but, you know, we used to watch shows like Perry Mason where they wouldn't take a case if they knew somebody was guilty. And I honestly, I would be a very bad defense attorney because I wouldn't. If somebody came to me and said, I did it, I'd say, well, then you need to call Mickey Sherman because
yeah,
I
exactly.
would not. I would not defend them. There's just no way. But I appreciate that Mickey tries to be, or is honest, and tries to help us understand how it works, even though I really still don't understand it. At least I get to hear the honesty behind it, you know, in the way he presents it, so I can, you know, sit here and gnash it out in my mind.
Exactly.
I hash it out in my mind, but I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do
it. Oh, I couldn't either. He is truly amazing that he is able to do that. And like I said, he gets a lot of grief for it, but he really is a good guy, and he will come back on the show to talk about the cases that we have coming up. So that's a good thing. I'm glad, and he's a funny guy. He's got a great sense of humor. And, you know, he is a good defense attorney because that's why he was able to afford to pay the IRS. $400,000. Pay the IRS $400,000. Yes, Mickey Sherman will take just about anybody's case, obviously. Okay, Kimster, I'm going to update you, and although there's not much update on Alicia Moore in just a bit, but let's go to the Web Sleuth Hot Cold Case of the Week first off.
Oh, boy, we're going to do it early this week.
Yeah,
hello,
is that
out there,
okay?
Everybody. Okay. Oh, wait, let me get the horn. Oh,
yeah,
here
get
it
your
is.
Horn.
All right. Okay, I'm ready.
So,
do, 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 do.
Perfect.
Yeah. Trisha, this
yes.
week's cold case came to us by request from Web Sleuth member Sleuthster. Don't you love her name?
I love it.
Sleuthster? Yeah, that's a good one, huh? Jeffrey Hedwood, who's been missing from Hattiesburg, Mississippi for 3 decades, has been gone since March of 1980. And Jeffrey was employed as a bartender when he went missing, and he was wearing glasses when he went missing. He also suffers from seasonal allergies, including hay fever, and he was wearing a Bulova watch that had the name Robert E. Bell inscribed on the back of it. So those of you who are looking into the unidentified and the unclaimed, if you find anybody that was wearing a Bulova watch with Robert E. Lee or Robert E. Bell inscribed on the back,
mm-hmm.
That could be our missing Jeffrey Hedwood.
Mm.
He also had a .25 caliber pistol with him at the time of his disappearance, and all the little details of the gun and his belongings can be read on Web Sleuths. I wondered about the pistol. So often we hear of a suicide scenario.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in his case, he worked as a bartender. So, you know, it wouldn't be that unusual for him to be maybe packing a gun and not be suicidal, but maybe he did it for protection. Anyway, recently there was a post made on another website that said the University of Southern Mississippi's campus police are also involved in this case. And so that's kind of struck some more interest in this case here recently. And we have no idea who this person is or if the information is correct, but we're hoping that by spotlighting Jeffrey's case, someone will come forward with more clues. So if you want to try to help and join members who are discussing Jeffrey's case, please go to www.websleuths.com, and in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a picture of Jeffrey along with a link to his thread. And those of you out there who are not members of Web Sleuths, what do?
By golly, oh my flipping heck. You jump up, you say, by golly, oh my flipping heck, I'm going to join. It's absolutely free to join Web Sleuths. All we need is an email address. We don't need anything else. We don't need your blood type, your firstborn male child, nothing like that. Just an email address, and you can make a difference just by posting and letting the families of the victims know that you're thinking of them. Kimster, thank you. You are truly amazing. I wish I had better news about Alicia Moore. Alicia Moore, 16-year-old Greenville, Texas resident, disappeared after getting off her school bus, and then her body, yes, that suffered trauma, was found under a bridge about 35 miles away. And you know what? There are just no clues. The FBI, they came in, they've done a search recently, and they did a big search recently. Nothing. Not a clue. I was hoping by today I would have something for you, but I don't, because there's really nothing out there. We are discussing Alicia Moore on Web Sleuths, so feel free to come, because let me tell you, if something does break, or if there's something to be found, our Web Sleuths members will find it. That's the great thing about Web Sleuths. You can go to the Alicia Moore thread and see how our members have been dissecting what little evidence is out there. And it truly is an amazing thing to watch these, I call them super sleuths, just jump in and figure stuff out. The way they do it, I mean, by golly, they use math and everything. I mean, it's just amazing to me. So hopefully next week we'll have more on Alicia Moore. We will be here next week, even though it is considered a holiday weekend. Kim, sir, you and your family have a wonderful Thanksgiving, my friend.
Thank you. And, you know, while you were talking about, you said, something sparked my antenna to go up here, being the alien that I am. We do have, you said if we have new information about Alicia Moore, our members will know right away. There is a new section in the Web Sleuths Resource Center. It's at the very top, and it says Today on Web Sleuths, and there's only two threads up there, but they're really helpful. One is daily bulletins, like if somebody has been found or something along that line, go there first, because you'll get to see all the, you know, as long as somebody's updated. But our members are going up there, and all they do is they'll write one headline post with a link to the thread, and it might say, so-and-so has been found safe, yippee, you know, and here's the thread, and so you can go straight to it. There's also a second thread that was actually, the idea was submitted by Betty Davis Eyes, and that one is about crime cases that are on TV today. So if you know that there's going to be something on Drew Peterson coming up, you can post it there and let our members be aware so they don't miss the show.
That's a great idea. So, yes, where is that again? That's in our resource center, and it's called Web Sleuths Breaking News.
It's called Today.
Today. Web Sleuths Today. Well, Kimster, thank you very, very much. We will. Are you going to be here next Sunday, or are you out and about flitting all over the world?
I might be out and about, but I thought that we wouldn't have a show. I'm surprised we are, but kind of exciting. So, you know, I'll see if I can change my loose plans as they
Okay. Well, let me just put it this way. I don't have anything planned yet because, you know, I usually don't until the last minute, but I'm going to work on it this week. I really want to get the Harris family on here to talk about Toni Ingram. We've heard Toni's side of the story about her daughter Morgan. We've got that show up for, you know, and thousands of people have downloaded that show. I would really like to get the Harris family up here and on the show, and so we can upload their side of the story so people can understand what it's like to be accused of a crime you didn't do. It's a horrible, horrible thing. And as much as everyone feels for Toni Ingram and what she's gone through with her daughter, nothing gives anybody the right to accuse someone of murder based on nothing, basically. So anyway, that's who I'll be working on. Hopefully they won't, you know, send me some sort of stalking order. I'm not trying to be rude. I'm just calling them and trying to be nice and seeing if I can get in touch with them. And we might have a few other surprises for you on the Sunday after Thanksgiving. So everybody in the chat room, Rain and everybody, thank you so very, very much. Wonder Llama, I know I'll forget somebody. So I just want to say thank you all, and I want you to have a very, very safe and wonderful Thanksgiving. And do remember, the opinions expressed on Trisha's True Crime Radio are those of the guests, moi, and the host would be moi, and the guests, and I never take responsibility for them. Trisha's True Crime Radio has absolutely nothing to do with WebSleuths.com, which is a completely different, separate corporate entity. And the same thing goes for forumsforjustice.org. In other words, Trisha's True Crime Radio is an entity unto itself, okay? We are all encapsulated into one being. I have no idea what the hell I just said. I'm going to go to bed. Good night, everybody. Thank you, Kim, sir. We'll see you next Sunday.